Morning, friends, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. We're doing a hybrid meeting this morning. We are Zooming, as well as we have in-person meetings now on Sundays. So anybody who's in the Philadelphia area, please feel free to join us. And if you do come to Theosophy Hall, we just ask that you refrain from any strong type of fragrance, aftershave, perfume, that sort of thing, clothes wash. We have members that are sensitive to odors such as those. And we are very grateful that we have had Zoom to remain connected throughout the pandemic and after. We've made many new friends, and it has been we have all been very grateful for the experience. There are some certain things that we do request, and that is that if you aren't talking, to please keep your microphone muted. And if you do have to get up and walk around, please stop your video. The movements can be very distracting. And we offer no crosstalk or side issues of personal anecdotes. And please direct your questions and comments to the chairperson and refrain from mentioning any names or initials when referring back to previous comments or questions. And these traditions are designed to welcome all and everybody to remain comfortable with commenting and asking questions about theosophy. So let us all work to maintain these declared traditions. And now we will turn the meeting over to the chairperson to start the meeting's class.
Good morning, and welcome again to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. Before we begin our meeting, we would like to read to you the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. This statement or this declaration is put forth as a reminder of our purpose and our aim, so that as older students and for newer students, that we need to remind ourselves of what we are here for. So the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards, or we should say we regard as theosophists, all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And we welcome to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. And in an endeavor to keep before the public this declaration, as well as the ideas that are found in the philosophy of theosophy, we hold three public meetings. Of course, this one on Sunday mornings from 11 a.m. to 12 noon is being held on Zoom and also at our location on 1917 Walnut in Theosophy Hall. Now, this is our last February meeting. And in February, the overall topic was the care of the soul. Now, this morning's class will be Will, the soul's physician. Now, the other meetings that we have, our next one after today will be on Wednesday evening. And in Wednesday evenings, we are studying together from the Ocean of Theosophy, a more or less condensed version of the secret doctrine, if that's at all possible. But the main points are brought out, and that is what's discussed, so that we have a firmer foundation in theosophical ideas and principles. This Wednesday, it's the 1st of March, begins the overall topic of mysteries of mind. And this Wednesday in the ocean, we are looking at karma, the fields of operation. Now, this meeting begins at 7:30 and is end at 8:45. And we are on pages 99 to 104 in the ocean. Then on Friday evenings, we have a roundtable meeting that is strictly on Zoom, and it is from 6:30 to 7:30. Now, the topics that we will be discussing are sent out each week in our flyer. So I didn't receive that flyer yet, but when we do, we'll let everyone know. Then next Sunday, again, on the topic of mysteries of the mind. And the topic will be for next Sunday, mind as a principle and a being. Now, these studies are offered freely to the public. And we consider ourselves an avenue for the public to become engaged in this philosophy. We are compelled to act. So we afford the opportunity for like-minded beings or students to participate in these activities at this lodge. All these activities are conducted on a voluntary basis of time, service, and money, and remind everyone that you are welcome to participate. And like a school, the more you participate, the more that you will learn. So that's why these meetings are open and free to the public, and we invite questions at all times. Now, this morning, again, our topic is will. The physician of the soul, or the soul's physician. And we'll have a short talk, a forum talk, to elicit some ideas on your part. So we will proceed.
Will and soul's position. The will is described in the Ocean of Theosophy as the greatest power in the human assemblage of complicated instruments. It is potentially all-powerful, being the very force of spirit in action. We also speak of will as a creative force. Everything that exists is the result of will, of the spirit in action, just as every element and characteristic of the whole ocean is contained in every single drop of water that composes it, so the will that has produced all is reflected in man. It is the offspring of the divine, the God in man. Will is universal and belongs to not only man and animals, but also to every other natural kingdom. The good and bad man alike have will, the child and the aged, the wise and the lunatic. It is therefore a power devoid in itself of moral quality. That quality must be added by man. So the truth must be that will acts according to man's desires. Or as the old Kabbalistic maxim states so wonderfully, behind will stands desire. Mr. Judge explains that the desires are always drawing man hither and thither, causing him to commit such actions and have such thoughts as form the cause and the mold for numerous reincarnations, and also enslaving man to a destiny which he rebels and that constantly destroys and recreates his mortal body. This is why the child, the savage, the lunatic, and the wicked man so often exhibit a stronger will than others. The wicked man has intensified his desires, and with that, his will. The lunatic has but few desires and draws all his will force into them. The savage is free from convention, from the various ideas, laws, rules, and suppositions to which the civilized person is subject, and has nothing to distract his will. So to make our will strong, we must have fewer desires. Let those be high, pure, and altruistic. And as a result, they will strengthen our will. The will as known to man is that force which he exerts for the accomplishment of his aims. He uses it blindly and ignorantly, and self is always the one for which he uses it. It is used as a brute force. As ordinarily used, it has little tendency to lift the personality farther than the attainment of material results. It has for its source the lower elements of the soul. The true will is a concentrated force working steadily yet gently, dominating both soul and person, having its source in the spirit and highest elements of the soul. It is never used for the gratification of self. and is inspired by the highest of motives. It is never interposed to violate a law, but works in harmony with the unseen as well as the seen. It is manifested through the human will for things visible. It is more than a faculty of the soul, for it is the soul at work. The spirit is unmanifest except through the soul. The soul manifesting the spirit is the true will. The human will is the lowest form of its manifestation. Mr. Crosby calls the real and true will the spiritual will, which flies like night and cuts all obstacles like a sharp sword. As the true will is the manifestation of the spirit through the soul, it must be at one with the divine, inasmuch as the spirit is the divine in man. It is the God in man, a portion of the all-pervading. Asserting itself through the soul, the true will is brought forth, and in true, some way, some say, it is the will of God. We may make our finite wills at will with the divine by elevating our aim, using it for good, as we strive to find how to use it in harmony with the laws of nature. By proper use in the right direction, the human will becomes purified, elevated, and being exerted only in conformity with our highest ideals, we eventually become at one with the highest in man. In our ordinary material state, we know only the human will. Through the human will, we reach the divine will. We become aware of the true will through the ordinary will, just as we become aware of the soul through the body. It is not instinctive of the soul. The soul is the father of the human will. Spirit is father of the true will. HPB tells us both will and desire are absolute creators, forming the man himself and his surroundings. But will, she states, creates intelligently. Desire creates blindly and unconsciously. But the man makes himself in the image of his desires unless he creates himself in the likeness of the divine, through his will, the child of the light. His task is twofold: to awaken the will, to strengthen it through use and conquest, to make it absolute ruler within his body, and parallel with this, to purify desire. In closing, if we realize that we are spiritual beings and think and act in the right direction, at once the spiritual will begins to work. The power of concentration is strengthened. The feeling of responsibility grows. Our whole nature begins to change, to be wonderfully transformed and aligned with our divine spirit. Once again, today's topic is will, the soul's physician.
Yes, will makes of us a god in potential or a demon And that is why we find not much said in the theosophical literature about will per se. But there is much said about it. Patanjali's yoga aphorisms are suggested not as something that you read like a book, but it's a companion to constantly investigate how to strengthen the will. But the other reason why we do not see much or hear much talked about the will is because of the dangers that it can impose upon humanity. The fact that it makes us as a god or with godlike powers is that mere fact alone that the elder brothers try to obscure from the mind of man at the moment, who is engrossed totally in his physical makeup, his physical being. And as long as man is so concerned, he is shrouded in darkness. So if anyone has any questions or any comments to make at this point, you're invited. SL?
In connection with our talk last week, behind will stands desire, but the point last week was that without imagination, the development of the faculty of the image-making power, the will cannot act. So even our desires, whether they be high or low, would seem to require some formation of a clear idea in our mind of what we want to achieve. And if we can't do that, then it makes sense we have to use our will to begin to work on that faculty to try to develop it.
And that's quite true. If we do not train the will, our desires will, that behind will stands desire, but at some point will and desire are the same thing. It's spoken of in the Gita quite precisely that we are all bound to action. So our action must be in a spiritual vein. So what to us is spiritual? Well, that is left to the imagination. You know, and most of us use our imagination when wanting to do something or wanting to go somewhere, but very much bound down by this material plane. SL.
Well, it seems as though we could begin to use what imagination we have by keeping before our mind's eye not so much the image of our personality, our own little selves, but keep before our mind's eye the image of the highest ideal we can imagine. And for some, that might be a spiritual instructor, or it might be one of the great sages or saviors of humanity, whatever one's tradition leads them to regard it as the highest perfected ideal of human accomplishment. And by doing that, it seems we would ask ourselves, well, how might this person or this ideal act in this circumstances? How might they think? And begin to try to act as if we were an expression of that, or try to emulate that.
The point is well brought out that we need to have an ideal. We have to be living towards something. What is it that we could possibly be? What what kind of world could we possibly live in? And there is no limit to our imagination. The only thing that we need is our principles of which to build our dreams or our imagination upon. It was mentioned that we should keep an ideal before us of the highest that we can be, the most compassionate that we can be. How can we help? We all find ways through our imagination and our will. If we are downcast and suffering, it's only through our will and our imagination that we can move forward. And one of we found quite fascinating is that, what is will? Where does it come from? How does it manifest? And it says that will is the one and sole principle of absolute, abstract, eternal motion. We've often heard in these rooms about the great breath. That's how the universe comes forward. Well, that motion in itself is will. It's that incessant desire for manifestation. It is what drives us forward as spiritual beings, is this will. This will to ever know ourselves. And once we know ourselves, that we are eternal, boundless, immutable beings that have before us the world, all we need to do is create a firm foundation of principles of who and what we are and why we're here. Our will is going to propel us forward, whether we want to or not. We are always being propelled forward. That's why they say after this lifetime, there will be some movement forward. We will have expanded our consciousness to some degree through the living of this life. And that in our next life, we expand upon that. And we are ever growing. There's only like three states of being is becoming or standing still or falling back. And we're compelled to move forward. We're compelled. Theosophy Hall.
We have a comment or question in Theosophy Hall.
So, absolute abstract motion, would that be the point in the circle, whereas pure subjectivity is before all? So the great breath, would that be signified by that first dot or that germ that's in that blank disc in the secret doctrine?
We would think that when looking at that white disc with the point in the center, is that is the first manifestation, the first coming forth. Yes, it's the will of the universe. It's the motion, it's the coming forth. And it's constantly coming forth from within outward. We are that universal expression. And that's why will makes of us a God in potential. SL.
WW had a hand up before.
Please, WW.
Thank you. I have a question. So it is understood that will is the creative force, the creative energy, like the chair just said, that makes us like God. And it's also understood that the desires has to be aligned with a specific goal for the will to be able to manifest it. So my question is, through my own personal studies and just being a part of this group also, I've come to the understanding that for the will to manifest, the desires that we want it to manifest has to be aligned with universal good, not from selfish desires. So the question that I'm asking is, if someone that has knowledge of the will and desires, but their desires, the thing that they desire to manifest is not for the universal good, but more for selfish intent, will that person still be able to manifest their will of their desires?
Well, we think that that's what we do. Whatever our motive may be, we manifest it. You know, this whole, our whole existence is a manifestation of our will. When it, you know, because this is, will is the force of spirit in action. The force of spirit in action. So will is a God-like quality. It's colorless, odorless, but we, as human beings, living this world of duplicity, of pairs of opposites, we are given the opportunity to develop within us our character and our imagination and our will to manifest that which we so desire. Isn't that how we all got here? Where we are now? It's through the manifestation of will. Even to come to this class this morning, you had to use your will. Will was the driving force. But the idea that you have, or the curiosity that brought you here, is used by the will. Theosophy Hall.
We have a comment or a question here in Theosophy Hall.
As to the comment that was made earlier, a little while ago, regarding where are our desires, universal desires or personal desires as they relate to the will, it's our understanding that the lower our desires, the more force of will is required to accomplish them. So in other words, that same amount of will, if our desires were higher and more universal, think of the incredible effect it would have, much more on the universal level than on our personal level. Lower it is, the more force we have to use.
We think the point is well taken, that the examples that we see throughout civilization, of Jesus and Buddhas and Zoroaster and Plato and Pythagoras, all these great minds were driven by will, by the will to understand the truth. And we don't give or we don't understand that we are spiritual beings. And once we clear away the lower tendencies of our desires and our passions so that they no longer rule us, we can take this power of will and direct it like a Buddha, like a Jesus, like any other more highly evolved being. That evolution is simply the unfoldment from within outward of our true essence. We are eternal, boundless beings, and we never die. Our consciousness just changes from one level of perception to another. So presently, we're on the material plane. So this is our plane of perception. SL?
Well, the conditions we find ourselves in don't seem to be just the result of our own will. The conditions we find ourselves in seem to be the result of the will of many others. Some we know, some we don't. And frankly, sometimes we find ourselves in a contest of wills. So what is the individual to do in a world where there is so much will force being exerted, which seems to be the very opposite of the ideals or what we will? Is there any way we can accomplish what our higher ideals when so much seems to be against us or against that tendency at this time?
Well, we certainly are very much aware of all the influences that we are bombarded with. Our auditory, our seeing, our just our sensitivities, our feelings in general are being bombarded. So how can we rise above them? Well, we have to keep our mind focused on the reality. What is that reality? That we live in a changing world. That this changing world we live in is trying to attract us to what it is that it is, a desire, a passion, a memory. It's trying to, or it does co-opt our will. And as said, and it will be said over and over again, we have to set our ideal high to transcend this material world in which we live in. It is a world of senses. We have to elevate our senses and not be taken away by one feeling or another, or one memory or one thought that will take us astray. We have to be in charge of our lower nature. And that is what the Gita talks about. That's what the philosophy is about. Once we free our lower desires, our will can act freely. But not until then. Theosophy Hall?
Yes, it's interesting, the title for today's class about will being the physician, the soul's physician. We were just thinking of, we've probably all experienced this, and it might be karmic and relate in to a degree, that we may have a desire to do something, but whether we're tired, we're upset, the will just doesn't seem to work. And some people may be called lazy, that they just don't do anything. So we're just wondering karmically, how would that, our karma, affect our ability to put that will into action?
We are challenged in every aspect of our life. There is no doubt that, but we are only, there's only the present is the only thing that exists, or the only, because yesterday is gone and tomorrow hasn't arrived yet. So there's only now. And this is how we can strengthen the will by making a commitment, making a statement, making a promise to do something. You know, we know we have a weakness. So we make a promise to ourselves, or we will ourselves, that we won't partake of this desire, this distracting desire that seems to be guiding my feelings more than it should be. So we can strengthen our will by using it, by making goals for ourselves, and by achieving them. That strengthens our will. That's why it's said at the end of each year, beginning of each new year, we are to make a resolution, but a positive resolution, something that will uplift our soul and our life. So it's a will prayer. A resolution is a will prayer. SL?
Well, certainly our present conditions can check our ability to call upon our will. But those present conditions are the result of how we've used that will in the past. So if we find ourselves in obstructive conditions, we can do, as very often is said in the philosophy, to work not just for the present, but to work for the future. And we think that's a key idea in helping us. Our will to work for better conditions for ourselves and the other and others is never obstructed by the present karma, because we are, as spiritual beings, we are always free to act on that plane, and the results will come eventually, no matter what obstructions may seem to be in our way for their manifestation in the present.
Yes, and it's said of this work, we are doing it for the future. We are imagining a world in spirit rather than a world in matter. We are evolving from the spiritual darkness into the full use of mind and spiritual perceptions. So we are evolving upward and becoming more human and then more divine. Theosophy Hall, you had a question there?
No, actually, WW has a hand up.
Okay, please.
Thank you. Just a comment on a previous comment in regards to the will, for lack of a better word, being lazy and not manifesting the desires. I have read and also viewed on many different contents that states that it's the intensity of our desires which really causes the will to manifest. So what is our theosophical response regarding that statement, that it's the intensity of the desires which leads to whether or not we manifest or not?
Well, think for a moment. Isn't that logical? The intensity of the desire? We see all around us people who have intense desires to achieve certain things. So on the spiritual front, we should say, what is the intensity of our desire to help others? What is the intensity of our desire to know the truth? You know, we will manifest that which we intensely desire. You know that's, you know, I don't know how we all are different ages here, but we manifest what we want. Sometimes, unfortunately, we get it when we don't need it anymore or when we don't want it anymore. But eventually, if we put our minds and will to work, it manifests. Our problem is that we think that the only world that really exists is this material world. And this is the material world is simply a reflection of the spiritual world. Theosophy Hall?
Yes, we have two comments.
Sure. With regard to manifesting and the intensity of desire, you know, there are laws working on different planes. You know, we can intensely desire all we want, but if we don't maintain a clear, concise mental picture of that which we desire, it's not going to work out. And then on the other hand, if we don't actually put a plan in action on the physical plane to bring it about and make it happen, you can desire it all you want and expect a miracle, but it's not going to happen if you don't actually take action to bring it about.
If we go back and look at the history of the Theosophical movement during the time of HPB's time here, there was a great deal of communication with the Mahatmas and those perfected beings. So the idea that, we lost our thought there for a second. Yes, the Theosophy Hall.
Yes, we have another comment.
During Kali Yuga, or the Dark Age, as it's known, where things are so materialistic, is it easier to manifest lower desires and more difficult to manifest higher desires?
Well, we are in Kali Yuga. So what do we see? And we see our desires manifesting themselves. So we are told by our Theosophical Association that we need to desire higher things, like brotherhood, like peace, like harmony, like cooperation, compassion. And we need to, you know, most certainly, the age in that we are in is one of great darkness. But the effort that's put forward during this time, in this time of great material struggle, will bear fruit sevenfold in the future. Because this effort to uncover these truths takes effort, it takes will. And this is how we strengthen our will, by inquiring for the truth and not being satisfied with what someone may tell you, but by our own inquiry, our own testing, checking, and verifying these ideas that come before us. Theosophy is based on that principle. You know, you can come to these classes and you can hear things. Maybe there some are a mistaken idea. So we are told even here, don't take anything for granted. Check, test, and verify. And the best checking and testing and verifying is against your own nature. What is true to you? What is real? What is right? What is fair? These are all intrinsic values that we all share. SL?
Going back to that idea about the intensity of desires, is it true that the degree to which we have strong or weak desires depends very much on the ideas we hold in our mind as to who and what we are. Even a very egotistical person has a great self-image in a personal way, and through that is able to exert their personal will in ways which one who has very little self-esteem, very little good image of themselves, cannot. As a matter of fact, they may exert their will in the accomplishment of keeping themselves small and little and insignificant. So it seems that's why so much study is necessary, why the emphasis on the consideration of these eternal ideas, so we can begin to bring our own ideas about who and what we are and what we can accomplish in line with them.
Yes, we would think that theosophy is here for a realignment. We all need to be realigned because we have been brought up in a system of an outside God, vicarious atonement, disharmony. And we need to know that we are a unity. What happens to one happens to all of us. And when one of us strives to raise ourselves up, we raise everyone with us. But vice versa, we don't want to be pulling people we don't want to be pulling ourselves down and everyone else with us. So the idea of will being such a spiritual power gives us great power. The only thing is what we struggle with is our personal self. Every one of us has a personality. The only problem that exists is who runs the show, the personality or the individuality, that higher consciousness, that witness, that perceiver that is constantly awake, even though we may not want to acknowledge it, but we are conscious constantly, totally, day and night, lifetime after lifetime. And when we die, it's only the death of the physical body. It is not the death of the consciousness. The consciousness, therefore, goes on to other planes of activity. You are, I am, we are eternal beings. We can't escape this. We have to face it, take responsibility for it, and move forward. And that's to work on with nature. Nature is moving forward. It's constantly moving forward. And we see that the only thing that holds nature back is man. So, will is everywhere. It pervades the universe. It is like space. So this godlike quality we have access to, but we have to take control of our lower nature. We have to train the monkey to act in a certain way so that the will has free rein to act and to unfold. Everything is an unfoldment from within outward. So we, as said before, we need spiritual knowledge. We need to plant seeds that will grow. And that's what theosophy is. It is those seeds. It is those seeds that we are planting now. or that we have planted in the past that we are just coming to fruition again because we're here. We're inquiring. We're not happy. We're not pleased with the world in which we live. There's too much suffering. We have no control. Well, theosophy says we can gain that control by controlling ourselves. And that control, that willpower, will radiate out from us. And it will affect all those that we love and are near to us through our effort. As HPB says, you know, we may seem weak and, you know, desperate, but we only can do one thing, is try. Just keep on trying. You know, we live in a world that's constantly changing. Constantly changing. That is the reality of the world in which we live. But look within, thou art Buddha. There is something within our nature that does not change, that is ever the witness. And that, as theosophists, we invite everyone to find in themselves that beacon of light, that foundation and where we can stand and observe the world, where we can see what is true and what is false, where we become the arbiters. We take responsibility for all that comes to us because of our own making. So we may be blocked from realizing certain things at this time. So we're blocked. We find other things to do while we become unblocked. And that one thing that we all can do, love thy neighbor. Be a friend. Be of good cheer. Yeah. Bring joy into your life and those around you. Not a phony joy, but a love and a compassionate joy. That you are concerned about the welfare and the well-being of those around you. That's being a theosophist. But then we need to acquire spiritual knowledge. And that knowledge is of loving deeds, the child. We need to know who we are, why we're here, what purpose is all of this? And when we can answer these questions, we begin to become less fearful. We become stronger in our feelings for others, because this may be a transitory world in which we live, but the connections that we see with each other are eternal. They're everlasting. We may have a physical or a male body and male features, but in another life, it may be a female body and a female features. That is not of our concern. Our concern is our spiritual nature. That is what's not changing. That is where we have to build our future in spirit. Because this physical passes away from lifetime to lifetime. Any other questions? Where there's a will, there's a way. Behind will stands desire. All these little things you can say to yourself all throughout the day, just to remind yourself that you are mind beings, that you experience the world through your mind. That's what our class next week, next Sunday, we're going to talk about that. You know, we are mind beings. but we are souls in evolution. The mind is the bridge between spirit and matter. And we are mind beings. Because we live in our mind. And however we think, that's what we become. It's quite astounding that, you know, how we think really matters. We know that when we came to this philosophy, we could, what are thoughts? We could have weird thoughts, and they don't bother us. They're just thoughts, but they're impressions. They're impressions. And we build, our lives are built upon those impressions. So don't, you know, the mind is a very dynamic aspect of our being. It radiates energy. So our thoughts and our feelings are radiators. So let us be radiators of love and compassion and knowledge. We lost our clock here. We don't know what time it is. Oh, it is time? Well, we will will this to end. So we hope that we've all found these few moments interesting and enlightening, but we want to remind you that this is a school and we invite you to participate. We don't grade you. We give you the opportunity, or this philosophy gives you the opportunity to make theosophy a living part of your life. So, meeting adjourned.